It's up there. Hi, good afternoon. You know, it seems like an intimate meeting, so please come up. We hope this is more of a conversation, although we do have PowerPoints, but please come up. I mean, there's plenty of space. So my name is Beatriz Solis, and I'm with the California Endowment. We're a health conversion foundation that focuses on work in California. And this panel is composed of building healthy communities partners, and the endowment has moved into a place-based strategy over a 10-year period in rural, urban, suburban communities in California. We selected 14 communities that are very diverse. So this is a conversation that we're hoping to have about how to push forward and still sustain and maintain community improvements that really come from the grassroots up, so that you are intentionally thinking about human capital. So that's just a little bit about how we got here and how we framed this conversation today. So that's why we're looking at lasting solutions. Formal disclosure. And I'm sure you've all seen the learning objectives. So why is leadership and capacity building important? And I think that for us at the California Endowment, it really became clear that you need communities organized. That at the California Endowment, we have funded many what we call treetop initiatives that really focus on state policy or regional policy. However, if you do not have advocacy groups or organizing groups on the ground to maintain and sustain and monitor those changes, that those policy shifts and changes could get lost in the shuffle or may not get funded or fully implemented in terms of the intent that was originally considered at the time. And as we know in terms of the social determinants of health frame that there are multiple factors that impact health outcomes for communities and also opportunities for communities to thrive. So we see this as one main driver to help support and sustain resiliency in community, because what we do too often in this country is that we do not look at building human capital in community. So how do we begin to do that? So through the presentations that you'll hear today are different strategies in terms of really building human capital and lasting change. You know, one thing that we've learned quite clearly is that we can't assume that sort of this social justice collaborative leader is something that just happens overnight. It really means building the muscle a little bit, stretching people to develop skills on collaboration, and to know when to be to take the back seat and when to take the front seat. And that navigation really is challenging at times, especially when there are multiple factors in terms of power and power differentials, not only in local communities, but when you deal with local government as well as other entities. So, you know, building community leaders' muscle in terms of being a collaborative one is one that we see that is important in building change. So as I mentioned, you know, we selected 14 communities across California. We're now in our third year of implementation. They sort of vary in size. If we think about any of the populations, most of the geographic areas contain approximately 90,000 people, which is fairly large. So we're looking at very large communities. And as most of you already know, it makes a difference where you live. So at the California Endowment, we had to find sort of creative ways of what we call changing the narrative, because as you know, public health, we like to say social determinants of health, but the real world does not know what the heck that means, nor is it a selling point to be able to influence change in the community. So we worked with communications experts to really drill down what is the essence in terms of the 2.0, how do we talk about, you know, inequality and racism and structural racism in a way that can really capture a broader audience about making change, lasting change now? So we went through this elaborate effort to really demonstrate life expectancy and life opportunity for communities by using these really short ads and placed in important places. So again, just one way to talk about place. So we know that where you live, it matters a lot. You know, so many reports have come out that really demonstrate that place matters in terms of opportunity, educational outcomes, and economic opportunity. So I'm just going to briefly go over sort of our theory of change. So when you think about the medical model, it is, again, looking at behavior, disease, and death. So we think of ERs, clinics, and health education. So that's sort of the traditional medical model. The socioecological model looks at building power in place. So that's why we are able to really enter the space of human capital quite directly. We see that policy advocacy is really critical. Far too many times we see individual cases of people from low-income communities that have beat the odds. We want to change the odds for larger groups of people. And then changing the narrative. How do we begin to communicate why it's important, for example, to care about the school-to-prison pipeline for black and brown boys in particular? You know, how do we influence that superhighway so that we're changing the narrative so that there's greater investment in opportunities? We see that by changing the narrative, we're looking at inclusion and sustainability. When we think of policy advocacy, thinking about health and all policies approach, and building power as a way to look at resiliency and transform communities. We see that as a mechanism to move this work in our 14 communities, we consider them kind of our drivers of change, that as you accelerate on each of these, you will have greater intensity and opportunity for change. So when we look at our drivers of change, we support all of these efforts. Changing the narrative, youth leadership, resident power, and looking at policy in terms of collaborative efficacy, leveraging partners. So how do we begin this process? So in California, we had over 22,000 people that reviewed community plans, and they told us exactly what they wanted. So I just want to go back and reinforce why we use the language of power. When we think about power in terms of youth and resident power building, we think it's the ability of getting what you want. So anybody that comes from middle class knows that if they're a parent, they can go into talk to the superintendent. They can really push the buttons in terms of power and own that power. So we know it's important to have, and it's important to call out. We also know that there's self-interest when it comes to power. So you have individual and community interests, and what you want is based on your values and experience. So power, we see it as neutral. We see it is claimed or built. We see that power is a product of relationships, and power is most effective when it's focused and channeled. Communities where people have strong relationships with one another are more powerful than communities where relationships are fragmented. So for us, in terms of the undergirding of the Building Healthy Communities work, it's relationship building between community members and advocacy groups. So I'm going to quickly talk through some of the early wins. As I mentioned, we're only 3 years into implementation, just to sort of get to lift up some examples of what we've seen already happening. So Orange County, not sure how many folks are from California, but okay, so you're probably very familiar with Orange County. Anyway, the politics in Orange County, it's really a very, very conservative area in California. And we selected one community in Santa Ana to really drill down. And the community told us, we want transparency in government. Even though their goal was to address the built environment, they felt that local government wasn't able to work with community, so they needed to make sure that the equation, the power equation, where you have developers and others that can go in and have access to City Hall, and when you have community advocates that are left out, they needed to change that equation. So they pushed for a sunshine ordinance, transparency and decision-making. You would think that why would that be so important, but it was catalytic to influence the power dynamic in that community, which then led to a change in the city council. It led to city planning department now contemplating a health and all policies approach in their general plan update to improve living conditions in this community. So it really was a catalytic shift in identity and perspective that the community had. So this, it wasn't TCE, it wasn't the endowment. These were the advocates that said, this is what we need to do in order to get those broader changes. In San Diego, another sort of catalytic event where in this part of San Diego, you have a large number of African immigrants, you have Latino and Asian and white living in this really, really diverse community that has been neglected by local government. And they decided that they wanted to focus on a skate park because they wanted to find what was important for youth in terms of engaging them and involving them in this community transformation process. Turns out that the youth said, we want a skate park. And it was really hard for some of the advocates to get behind a skate park because they also had a perspective on skateboarders, that skateboarders were sort of this fringe group, not connected with anybody, that they're a nuisance, they're not organized. But it turns out that these were the most organized kids and the most cross-cultural and the ones that were more bridge-building compared to other kids. So basically, they took the forefront of this movement with the Tony Hawk Foundation, which is, by the way, a really super-duper group that has a great methodology in engaging young people. They don't lead it. They support youth groups to really take up the fight for building a skate park. And what they, in their political analysis, they saw that they needed to build bridges with seniors in the community because they figured out that seniors were not necessarily on board with skateboarders because they wanted a passive park, a park where kids could not play. And so they intentionally bridge built with seniors, and at the end of the day, were able to get the mayor to put in $3 million for a skate park, donate the land, and also take ownership of maintaining the park in a period of a year. So what was really massive about this was the first time in City Heights that a cross-cultural group of young people actually took ownership. So again, something that is doable, lasting, and now these young people are on to their next campaign. They know that young people don't have transportation to school, so they're now pressing local government to make sure that there are free passes for young people to have access to buses to get to school. So they're getting, so that's their next campaign. So again, it's sort of this, once you build up the muscle and the voice, how they move on to other issues that they care about. Another short one was inclusion of immigrants in local government in Long Beach, California. Again, a very diverse community with a fairly large Cambodian population, Vietnamese and Latino. Many of them were left out of local government activity because of language access issues. There were no interpreters or translators available. So what they said is that in order for us to have a real inclusive community, we need to make sure that everybody's understanding what's going on in these meetings. So push for a language access local ordinance, and they got it passed. And again, sort of another way for cross-cultural groups to come together. And now, you know, they're working on several issues, on affordable housing, development plans in the community that are potentially able to displace many of these low-income populations as a result. And the last example is in Boyle Heights in Los Angeles, where young people were funded to do a truth grounding effort around the school to prison pipeline. And they did an audit with young people in two separate areas of Los Angeles and found out that truancy tickets were just one of the veins to the superhighway from school to prison. And again, in a period of time, we're able to collect data, get information, get the chief of police in the room, present the data. By shortly after, the chief of police, and we're talking about LA City, which is over 10 million people, it's no small move, to put a moratorium on truancy tickets, because what they found is that it was mainly among Black and brown families that it was disproportionately came to the county. And many of these kids' families did not have discretionary income to pay for these tickets. So as a result, the tickets just keep increasing and becomes far more problematic for young people. Anyhow, from this work, it led up to 6 bills that landed in the state chambers in Sacramento. Actually, 7. 6 were passed. And now is a major catalytic move to identify what are those other veins that lead these kids onto this super highway and really deal with it at a local level as well as a statewide level in terms of policy advocacy. So it was a really big win in terms of changing the narrative around seeing young boys of color as important to invest in and to shut down that super highway. So building power is, as I mentioned at the beginning, sustaining and protecting and advancing local work that happens in community. Organizing youth and residents is a critical element to policy and systems change work in a community. You have to build human capital. Scaling up. I mean, I think one thing that we have at the California Endowment is that we're able to scale up across sites. So as the work happens, we're able to connect what is happening with other Building Healthy Community sites and then translate that with advocacy partners at the state level in terms of state policy. So it's a local, regional, and grassroots state approach. Collaboration, absolutely critical in these times for the needed change that's, we've already seen from these early wins. And policymakers. I mean, I think if policymakers have residents from their community speaking to them about the problems, it makes a difference. But they can't go alone. They have to build broader coalitions to be able to push that. What we've realized, communication matters, and it matters a lot too. So how do you begin to build the muscle of storytelling at the grassroots level so that you have young people telling these stories, but you also need to press on other outlets of media to begin to change that narrative as well. So I am going to stop there. What we're going to do is we're going to go through each of the presentations, and then we'll leave it for Q&A.